Right. All right. Well, hey, welcome to the first ILO working group call in a while. Given springtime is fraught with annual report deadlines and site visits and everything else, we tend to not have very many of these calls in the springtime. And for some, those are still going on. For the rest of us, hopefully, we're able to take a breather before summer hits. We've got a couple of topics on the call. One of the topics is around the Directorate for Technology, Innovation, and Partnerships, which is a relatively new directorate within NSF, and where we kind of sit now in that NSF hierarchy. But before we get to that, I want to hand it over to Chris Finberg just to give us an update on how the steering committee is going for the ILO summit coming up in not too awfully long. Chris?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, everyone. Just a quick update. I think you all did receive an email back in early May. Stephen Fleming has offered to host the next ILO summit at Tucson. So very generous of him to do that. And then we did send out a doodle poll about availability on dates and our initial first pass at potential topics. So if you have not responded to that, please do, because the planning committee is meeting this Friday. So solidify specifically the date and then most likely the topics as well for our upcoming agenda. That's it.
Great. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, please go ahead and reply to that poll. It's really important to get all the feedback in and land on what works for the most we can. Okay, so with that, we're going to switch to our main topic today, which, as I mentioned, is the Directorate for Technology, Innovation, and Partnerships, which, again, it's a relatively new directorate within NSF. We're tightly tied to that directorate, but we don't know a lot about it. And then recently, just a few weeks ago, there was a summit held with industry leaders and this organization within NSF. And we didn't hear about it, but we wanted to know information, and we wanted to kind of two ways here. We wanted to get on their radar so they knew that there was a resource within NSF that is, we live and breathe industry, innovation, and partnerships. But in addition, we wanted to understand better what happened at the summit and if there are takeaways that can impact how we do our jobs here with NSF. So to that end, we've got a few folks on the line. We've got Brandy Schottel, I hope I'm saying that right, Jennifer Pearl, both of them are from the Directorate for Engineering. And then we also got Alan Walker from the Directorate for Translation, Innovation, and Partnerships. So I'm going to have you three introduce yourselves as you start here. And then while you're doing that, I'll make Jen a co-host so she can share her slides. So maybe Jen, why don't we start with you?
All right. thanks, Scott. Good afternoon. Thanks for inviting us to come talk to the ERC Industry Liaison Group this afternoon. You have three of us here on the line, and we're going to talk with you a little bit about this industry summit that Scott mentioned, and also about the new TIP directorate. So we can introduce ourselves a little bit, and then we've got some slides to share with you. I'm Jennifer Pearl. I've been at NSF for about 15 years in different capacities. And right now I am in the engineering directorate working on partnerships, but temporarily working in the office of the directorate, also the director. So I kind of have a foot in both worlds. I'm a mathematician by training, and very pleased to be here to talk with you. So maybe I'll throw the ball over to Brandy.
Yeah, this is the perfect order for this. So I'm Brandy Schottel. You said my name correctly. Well done. Nicely done. It's a good thing we did this in this order, because right now I'm actually filling Jen's role in the engineering front office as the advisor on partnerships while she's on detail in her other position. My day job, though, is actually as a program director in one of the engineering divisions, the Chemical Bioengineering Environmental and Transport Systems, where I work on integrative activities. My background, while I'm a chemist, I tend to work on sustainability topics. And I actually, in the last few years or so of Renewit, I was interacting with that center along with Bruce Hamilton. I worked within his cluster, so I'm familiar with the program and and many of the things you're trying to accomplish. I've been at NSF 10 years, and I am also interested in hearing some of this, the feedback from you all on this topic. So, and by the way, Jen and I were the engineering, or we were representatives for the directorate at this summit, but there were representatives from every single directorate and office as well. So just to kind of give you a picture, you're going to be seeing this just from one lens here, but we'll get into that in the talk. So Alan, I'll throw it to you.
Thanks, Brandy. My name is Alan Walker. I am senior advisor here in TIP. So I have to chief of staff. The other half is strategy and outreach. I've been at NSF for 4 months. I just retired from the Army. My last assignment was at DARPA, where I was the special assistant to the DARPA director for 3 years. And then prior to that, I was an Army officer, you know, doing Army things. But NSF really got me interested in this, or excuse me, DARPA got me interested in science and technology, and then TIP with its focus on user-inspired research is really, it seemed like a natural fit for me. So excited to be here and talk about TIP.
Thanks, Alan. I suspect there's a lot of people on this call who would love to bend your ear about your experiences with DARPA, but for another time, but yeah.
All right, let me start with some slides here.
We can see.
Does this look really big and funny to everybody?
No, it wasn't in presentation mode before, but it is now.
Okay, is it all stretched out, or is it the size of the slides okay?
It looks good to me. Anyone else?
All right, excellent. I have a giant monitor, so you never really know how things are going to show up for your colleagues here. Okay, so you know, as you, I know that you have heard, partnership and engaging with industry are becoming much more important at NSF. It's something our director talks about all the time and has really made it a priority for us. And you all in the ERC community have been doing this for a long time. And so we're really happy to report out to you on the recent convening that NSF sponsored in April. And first, we're going to tell you a little bit about the summit, and then we'll tell you a little bit about the new TIP directorate. So let's see, by holding this summit, which took place in the last week of April, we really hope to foster candid conversations and engaging discussions on how co-investing between NSF and industry partners could enable innovation in critical technology areas, support vibrant growth of the U.S. industry, and help with the reskilling of the American workforce nationwide. We encourage the group to think of non-traditional approaches to enhance the next generation of public-private partnership models and to help identify effective strategies. So when NSF talks about partnering, it can mean a lot of different things. So just to give you a sense of the different types of partnerships that were on the table at the summit and that we think about, if you look at the paragraph in the lower left of the slide, so partnerships types discussed range from direct partnerships, which would be, for example, if Intel works with NSF to run a funding competition. So Intel has done this before. I find a mutual topic of interest, and NSF and Intel kind of write the call for proposals together, and the proposals come into NSF and they get supported with money that's coming from both NSF and Intel. So that's a model that we engage in, and we call that direct partnerships because it's really a partner working as a funding companion for NSF. We also talk about catalyzed partnerships, where an example would be the ERC model, so where the grantee institutions have the relationships with the industry partners. On the ERC competition, you know, each of you is reaching out to industry partners, but it didn't happen at the level of NSF, it's happening at the level of the grantee. And then a third type of partnership that we have not done too much of, but is coming to the forefront a little bit more, is when an industry site can actually serve as an NSF awardee. So NSF has begun issuing what's called broad agency announcements, which is a mechanism that allows us to work better with industry and actually give money to industry. It's something we can do. It's something we don't do that much of, but it's something we're considering more going forward. And then thinking about actually, you know, what happened that day when everyone was here. Here are some nice snapshots. And you can see on the second picture, that's our director, Ponch, who came to give some remarks in the afternoon. And on the one on top of it, that's Erwin Gianchandani, who's the assistant director for TIP. And we had over 60 industry representatives there, cutting across 11 different sectors that you could see broken out on the slide. And some of the main takeaways were the importance of AI embedded in all different industries as we go forward, and also a high interest in working together on training and workforce development, especially thinking about the community of college level. Now, on this slide, I know it's a little bit small for you, but this actually lists the companies that were present. We thought you would be interested in taking a look at the list here.
You know, Jen, while folks are looking at this list, in the chat, someone asked if the waiting room could be checked. Unfortunately, I couldn't make you co-host. I had to make you the actual host. So I can't check the waiting room anymore. Would you mind just checking the waiting room?
Yes. How do I do that?
If you go to participants, it should be at the top. Folks that are waiting to get in. I don't know if anyone.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I have someone. Stephen Fleming. Okay,
thank you.
Sure. No problem.
And thanks for bringing that up.
Okay. Are there any other, while we have a break here, are there questions that people want to ask at this time?
How were the attendees selected out of the list that we see?
How did we come up with this list?
Yeah.
I'm going to defer that over to Alan, because I actually don't know. Do you know, Alan?
I do. Yeah, we started with sort of big companies, think Fortune 100, that we thought had a strong technical or research capability, but that maybe hadn't done business with NSF or the federal government before. We invited about 100 different companies, and as you saw, about 60 showed up. But this was not intended to be a complete list. It was really our first attempt at doing this. And we hope to have additional engagements. They may not be at the scale of a summit, but we definitely want to keep doing more of this.
Would it be possible to be able to get a contact list from the representatives that attended this? So if we wanted to follow up and say, hey, how did it go from your perspective? Are there things that, you know, maybe the ERC is already partnering, or this company is a member with a particular ERC, and it could be an anchor for a conversation there. Is that possible?
Yeah, I'll have to check on that. I don't know.
Okay. That'd be great if we could check. That'd be really interesting. Thanks.
All right. So the day was split up between panel discussions and breakout sessions. So I'd like to throw the ball over to Brandy now, who's going to talk about some of what we heard at the breakout sessions that we attended. So let's see.
You want next slide? Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. So so I'm happy to do this. There were actually three breakout sessions of varying degrees of drilling down to different issues that we wanted to discuss. And we do want to give you a caveat here. Again, the formal report is still being prepared. Jen and I actually were at the same table all day that sometimes switched people out, but the primary focus of the industry partners there were semiconductors. So some of the things I'm going to go over in some of the later slides are more pertinent to a specific field, but you can see the echoes of what it might be like in your particular field as well. There were some very common call outs across the way. The first breakout session was more general, and it was focused more on, we were looking for overarching opportunities and challenges for partnerships with industry across multiple sectors. Okay, so this one was the most relevant to every single person that was there. It was rather interesting to find some of these out, and one of the first things we discovered is we need more time to discuss these, which is what usually happens in breakouts when you really get into a topic. And so this first session, a lot of the takeaways were focused more on challenges that people were encountering. And one thing that we heard
loud and clear that I thought was interesting is it's not always clear how industry can participate. The catalyzed partnerships like ERCs, that is a little bit more clear. And even direct partnerships, you know, you can see examples of that where there's been outreach and then a company comes together with us and we develop something and you can see it posted. But understanding how industry can participate as the principal investigator was actually not clear. And, you know, now, you know, we started hearing why this was. And we also started hearing that industry was very interested in fundamental research and that they wanted to explore different ways to do this. It's interesting that Alan mentioned DARPA. One of the things that also came across loud and clear is NSF has shifting timelines and terms that are really hard to track if you're not familiar with them. Especially, you know, the academic calendar is one thing, but industry calendars are different. And so it wasn't clear, and they kept shouting out to DARPA, where it's very clear and very consistent, so they know when to come and start looking for things. And so that was kind of interesting. Along these timelines, though, there were also issues even with catalyzed partnerships, such as the academics coming to industry very late in the process. And so there's some barriers that are actually thrown up there, including things like getting letters of collaboration in time, you know, getting, you know, the lawyers in place and making sure everything in the project is what you're signing off on is what you want. And they also mentioned, too, that oftentimes, especially in larger companies, you know, you have to have alignment with the chief technology officer and the chief financial officer. And then, if it's on workforce development, you have the added HR component that really has to come together in all of this time. So there was also discussions on the push-pull between discovery-driven science and use-inspired research. Which has always been there, all right, but it was highlighted in some specific sectors. And then, of course, intellectual property concerns and the rules surrounding that. And when could you actually not worry about that at all? And that's usually in workforce development type things. And then one thing that actually was across the board is even when NSF and industry want to support students or postdocs as interns, oftentimes the university or the faculty may not see the value of it, right? Because there's a timing issue here. We want this student in my lab. The student may not even see the value of it because they want to graduate and that's extra time. And so there are discussions on how could we express this value better? How could we get this across to the community so they understood that the real need is there and there was a lot of value in it. So next slide, please. All right, so breakout session two was more industry specific. And again, this was on semiconductors. It was noted that this industry does have a semiconductor sector decadal plan that's already identified important areas of research in the space. So they kind of focused on more overarching cross topics and needs. And so this could be transferable to other sectors as well. They were worried about handling the energy and size demands of big data clusters. They were working about quantum computing and when that will come into play in their industry. And they also need increased use inspired design, getting to the point where point of use case is driving hardware, which then drive materials and align hardware roadmaps with AI roadmaps, which currently aren't integrating as they move forward. And of course, they have the very common issue of facilities. They don't have facilities to properly train faculty and students across diverse locations in the United States. Costs of fabrication are too high in their industry. And then a big one, which I thought was really fascinating, that they spent a lot of time on was the code culture change. This change in sharing of code is not going to happen much longer, as evidenced by some publications that have come out, which may actually cause some severe limitations in their industry. So in the semiconductor workforce, that was a big issue. So next slide, please. And then the final one was workforce needs, including diversity, equity, inclusion issues. And again, while this was semiconductor focused, it was standard across the board when there was report outs. So there was a lot of emerging workforce needs discussed. And by the way, in this one, we actually got through all the questions, which was kind of nice. They were very dedicated to this topic. there was just a very general opening comment that we need at least two times the workforce, all the way from early career to PhDs. And that was just a poor estimate, and that the need is actually much, much greater in this space. There was a specific focus on domain specific data scientists, right? They're getting a lot of data scientists that they actually have to train in semiconductor areas. It would be nice to do the reverse in some cases. And then, of course, cybersecurity experts in AI. There was this comment, you can't just go to a campus and ask them, who are your graduates in AI and cybersecurity? It's not how it can be done, because these people don't exist in the quantities that we need. For all topics, I said early career personnel, such as manufacturing technicians, were missing. And I know this is actually common across all engineering fields, that we're missing, that we're getting a smaller, smaller workforce in that space. And they also need to figure out how to rapidly upscale technician level people into the semiconductor topics in this space. They did give a lot of good examples of some things that have worked in trying to build up the workforce. One of my favorite ones was a company that said they had a bunch of PhD interns, but they also hired a bunch of recent graduates from community colleges to be technicians, and they actually started training them with the same problems. The technicians are actually learning faster on what they need to do than the PhDs. And it's an ongoing experiment on, like, what do you actually need to hire to do specific jobs? And so they're still working that out. Other options for the future, they were talking about, you know, maybe we need to start talking about STEAM instead of STEM and putting in art and other skills, because we need people that can pivot very quickly. And so oftentimes these other skills can be developed through other fields and make it so someone can adapt. They also talked about model successful company community college programs that they had that had been working. And then the final echoing piece, which we've all heard, but it always needs to be restated. They all agreed that even though there's more investment in DEI infrastructure, trying to bring more people in, the problem isn't getting better, it's actually getting worse. And there needs to be a real concerted effort and time put into this. And they even pointed to the fact that the same people that people are touting as their diversity hire are just switching places. They're going from company to company. They're not increasing the workforce. And so they, again, were talking about, it's not just money. A lot of companies are investing money in HBCUs, but just money. You have to invest the time and actually go in and help them with their curricula and different things like that. So we got a little bit more into that breakout. So next slide, please. All right. So for next steps, Alan already alluded to this. I believe they're going to be working on more sector-specific work groups, right? Because this was a more broad gathering. They may not be, again, at the level of a summit. They might be a smaller thing, but again, we might also have summit-wide different issues. They also might focus on very specific things like workforce needs, right? Because that was a huge issue and probably one of the ones that was discussed the most in the afternoon that came up in all sessions. And then also, I do know there will be attempts to have follow-on summits with other groups, such as nonprofits, state and local governments, et cetera, for NSF to help explore different ways we can partner in the future. So I'm going to stop there and turn it over to Alan to give you a little bit of background on TIP. And also, are there any questions right now, or do we want to save this part for the end? I'm not sure.
We can do it how you'd like. We reserve some time at the end for Q&A, okay. But if folks have clarifying questions, of course, they can ask.
All right, should we go over to Alan?
Sounds good. Great, thanks. So as I mentioned, I'm from TIP. I'm senior advisor. Next slide, if you could, Jennifer. So we're... TIP is just about a year old, a year and 2 months old. We were formed as part of the Chips and Sciences Act of last year. And we're still very much in startup mode. We've launched quite a few programs since we've stood up. Some of them are long, I would say, sort of long-term programs, several of them, but the majority of our portfolio are proof of concepts and prototypes. You know, we'll run it for 3 to 4 to 5 years, see what works, and then tweak if necessary, or even move on if it's not meeting the need, or, you know, the world has moved on and it's no longer relevant. So I say that because we are still rounding out our portfolio, and we are always open to discussions about new ideas, new partnerships, new programs. So if you have thoughts, please reach out. So in TIP, we really have sort of three thrusts that we're focusing on. You can see them listed here. The first is fostering innovation and technology ecosystems. And we think about those a little separately. So innovation, of course, is the way we're defining it anyway, is through programs like the Engines program, where we're looking at regional innovation, or even innovation through programs like our Convergence Accelerator that brings multidisciplinary teams together. The second is technology ecosystems. And as you're probably aware, in the Chips and Sciences Act, there's 10 key technology areas: quantum, AI, climate change, those kinds of things. They're, none of them would surprise you, but we were really given direct guidance by the Chips and Sciences Act to focus in those 10 key technology areas. The second is establishing transition pathways. And this is really, as you're probably familiar with, translational research is, of course, getting an idea that started in the lab, getting it to benefit society. So going to industry is just, commercialization is just one option. It could be informing policy. It could be through open source ecosystems, those kinds of things. But again, how do we accelerate these ideas to societal impact? And then finally, workforce development, primarily for the 10 technology areas, but we aren't necessarily bound by those. But as the director likes to say, we want, you know, we know that there's talent everywhere, but there isn't necessarily opportunity everywhere. So we need to meet people where they are to help invigorate the workforce across the entire country. You go to the next slide, please.
Sure. I also see that we have very short on our meeting time. We only have about 8 minutes. Is that right, Scott?
I booked this meeting for an hour. So let me see where...
I got a pop-up saying that the Zoom, you need to upgrade your account if you want a longer meeting.
Oh, geez. You know, when I switched from University of Washington over to Georgia Tech, there were issues with Zoom. Let me work on that in the background. Please continue.
All right.
I apologize. Okay. If we get cut off, I really apologize. But I'll work on trying to solve this in the background.
You want me to run through the animations on this, Alan?
Yeah, just if you could, I think it's one more, two more. Okay. So I'll be real quick because I definitely want questions for the end. So I think we're all familiar, one more if you could, Jen. So we're all familiar with the Valley of Death, but the NSF, so the TIP entrepreneurial programs are really designed to help bridge that gap between public funds and private funds. And you can see along the bottom the different kind of stages that an idea will take as it goes from the lab to society. We have programs which you're probably familiar with, like ICOR, Partnerships for Innovation, and SBIR, that are really focused on helping along that path from lab to society. And we are thinking through, you know, other ways, potentially could we act almost as a VC in some ways for things that might not apply for SBIR, but are still ripe for or are stuck in that valley of death, that we might provide some help to get to that private funds. One note about how NSF does CBIR, definitely different than, say, how DARPA uses CBIR. So NSF really focuses on reducing, helping small companies reduce technical risk so that they can then be much more attractive for that private funds. If you go to the last slide, Jen, please. Okay, I just wanted to mention our Regional Innovations Engines program. We call it Engines for short. Last Thursday, we awarded the first planning grant. So there's two grants. There's the planning grant, which is $1 million for 2 years, and then there's the full-fledged $160 million over 10 years. We just announced the planning grants. You can see we awarded 44 across the country. On the right-hand side, you can see the topic areas. This is an interactive map. If you go to the NSF website and you can hover over each of those little icons and find out the proposal, you can see who the PI is, as well as the what their topic is and any partnering organizations. Very diverse set of topic areas, as you can see. But this is really how do we create opportunity across the country, as well as invigorate regional economies. And so each region chooses an idea that really is kind of the region has some sort of value proposition will have a societal benefit. And then the idea is we want the region to go all in on this from every sector, from industry, nonprofits, state and local governments, and academia. We want them all, or we're trying to incentivize them to all focus. And so the type twos, the $160 million grant should be awarded this fall. But we're very excited, of course, about this program. So we have about 15 other TIP programs that I'm happy to talk about at some other time, ranging from translation to entrepreneurial learning. But I'll stop there so that we can have just a couple minutes if we get cut off for questions.
Let me just interrupt there and say, yeah, we will get cut off. And I apologize that my Georgia Tech Zoom just has never been good. But I just set you an updated appointment because Dimitro was willing to use his Zoom link. So when we get cut off, because we will, go to your calendar. There's a new Zoom link in there. Go on there and we'll continue the call with Q&A. But until then, until we get cut off, yeah, thank you, Alan, very much. Thanks, all of you. And we'll open it up for general Q&A right now.
Alan, just quick question about the NSF engines. That was the type one, the development awards. And do you have any estimate of when the type two will be announced? I know that's going to be a while, right?
It will, yeah. We just started reviewing. The panels are meeting now. So we're expecting late fall.
Thank you.
And Alan, in parallel to that, you're doing the engines platforms solicitation as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. That solicitation came out a couple of weeks ago. And we see that as 100% key to the success of the engines. So we're really excited to see what the proposals are. It is half sort of IT system that helps the region, but the other very important half is the mentorship and education and sort of expertise that whoever wins this can bring to help a region along in their journey to being self-sustaining.
You know, Alan, one thing that we think about in the ERCs is, sustainability and what does our ERC look like after our funding cycle is done. The engines program seems like an interesting direction for us to think about or to potentially go in. The component to that I'd like maybe some feedback from you on is the geography of it. You know, as we think about our ERCs, many of them are, with institutions scattered across the entire country. How do we, is there a way or have you seen or can you comment on, concentrating that in a geography as opposed to, utilizing the expertise across the country?
Thanks, Tim. Maybe I didn't quite understand your question. We did You know, we had 44 planning grants that we awarded, and those were, you know, if we had more money, we probably would still have awarded 44 planning grants, because those were the ones that we really think have a high, you know, success potential. We of course want all these to be successful. So, but we, you know, if we had two equal proposals, 100% equal, then we would probably choose a more disadvantaged area than, you know, putting one smack dab in the middle of Silicon Valley. So the goal is to really blanket the country. We expect, you know, 10 or 15 or so ish of the type twos to be awarded this fall. And again, we hope for a very, you know, very geographically dispersed as well as topical dispersed set of awards.
Hey, Alan, maybe I can clarify a little bit. The ERCs involves several institutions that are they themselves geographically dispersed. So whereas the engines are based on geography, right? There's one around Rochester, or there's one around, you know, Spokane, or whatever the city is. The ERC model is, well, one ERC will have institutions that are spread out around the country.
Thank you, Jen.
Yeah, thank you, Jen.
Should we all hop on the new link now?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. Good time to do it. Thanks. We'll see you there.